This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jackson Vunganyi, and here is what is coming up.
And the war against Al-Shabaab in those days and today is a bit different. Al-Shabaab become more complex and they become very sophisticated. And now we've changed the strategies that we are fighting. We're developing new strategies, new approaches.
That is Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud on how the challenges of fighting terror group Al-Shabaab have changed since his first time in office. All of this and more coming up on African News Tonight. Queen Elizabeth II is being buried today, closing the last chapter on Britain's longest-serving monarch. Thousands of people have lined up in recent days to pay their last respects to the Queen and see her lying in state. Joining me via phone is VOA from London is VOA's Henry Ridgewell. Hello, Henry.
Good to be with you, Jackson.
Thank you. Henry, can you explain to us some of the ceremonial pageantry we saw on television with thousands of people lined up to send off the Queen?
Yes, this was an extraordinary day of the full British state power of pomp and ceremony on display to give a final farewell to Queen Elizabeth II. She's been lying in state in Westminster Hall, that thousand-year-old hall that's hosted so much of British history, for the past 4 days. And hundreds of thousands of people, as you've been reporting on, have been lining up to see her and to pay their last respects. This morning, at about 10:44 exactly, in fact, these things are very tightly choreographed. Her body was taken, her coffin was taken on a royal gun carriage carried by just short of 100 Royal Navy personnel from Westminster Hall into Westminster Abbey, the religious setting for so much of that history. The pallbearers took her coffin into the middle of the abbey. She was followed immediately by her first son, now, of course, King Charles III, and her other three children. Mm. And behind them, Prince Harry and William. And William, too, with two of his children as well, Prince George, just 9 years old, and Princess Charlotte, just 7 years old.
Right.
So the full line of succession, if you like, on full public display for the service.
Right. And what is the mood like in the streets of London? What are some of the feelings being expressed by the people and the royal family?
It's difficult to sum up in just one way, I think. There are a multitude of emotions. There are some who feel this very personally, I think. They felt a deep attachment to the Queen after 7 decades of her on the throne, and they feel like they've lost somebody they've loved. There were tears shed, there were flowers thrown. For some, it was a very deep and personal day. For others, I think they turned up out of respect for the monarch and those 7 decades of rule and of service to the country. And for all, if not most, I think it was just to be there on a significant day of history, to be part of it and to be part of the group witnessing what was happening. For the royal family itself, I suppose they are well used to playing their grief out in public. One thinks back to the funeral of Princess Diana, for example, or the funeral just a year or so ago of the Queen's late husband, Prince Philip. But this has been a very difficult 10 days for them, of course, and they've had to keep that famous British reserve going. There were few tears shed, really, that we saw among members of the royal family, although, of course, they feel this very deeply and personally. Mm. So a difficult time for them.
Absolutely. And King Charles effectively is now in charge of the monarch. Some say a monarch that is in decline. What is expected of him? How is he likely to be different from Queen Elizabeth II?
I think he faces a difficult task. His popularity was nowhere near that of the Queen before her death, although in the 10 days since then, its polls show that actually his approval ratings have increased significantly by about 25%. People think he's done a good job of shepherding the country through a difficult time, of showing humanity and unity at this time. But looking ahead, yes, the monarchy is in a difficult situation. Its popularity is at an all-time low, albeit at 60%. So a majority still approves of the monarchy, but about 20% don't, and they tend to be younger generations who perhaps were not impressed by the treatment of Harry and Meghan and how they left royal duties and went to live in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so he faces the task of having to modernise the institution, I think, which won't be easy, while also keeping on board Commonwealth nations and other nations where the monarch is still head of state. There are 15 countries in total, and many of those Commonwealth members have said that they are thinking about cutting ties with the monarchy or becoming republics. Australia, for example, plans to hold a referendum in the coming years. Even the Bahamas and other Caribbean nations as well have indicated that they are thinking of cutting ties with the British monarchy.
Right. VOA reporter Henry Ridgewell joining us from London. Thank you, Henry.
Thanks, Jackson.
And still in London, we have Venuste Nshimiyimana, who has been talking with members of the African diaspora on the Queen's influence and how they see the future of Britain's relations with its former African colonies. Hello, Venuste.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. The UK is home to thousands of Africans. What have been some of the reactions to the Queen's death and funeral?
I met some of them from the diaspora. They came to pay their tribute to the late Queen. And what they told me is that they are here to commemorate the life of service of the Queen, Elizabeth II. For them, some say that it is inappropriate now to argue about the monarchy, but others believe, although they traveled much to be in London, they question even the expenses of the funeral at a time when the country is going through a severe financial crisis. I spoke to a gentleman from Togo who asked when they should start getting the dividend of being a member of the Commonwealth. But louder voices came from the Caribbean. They hope that time has come to ask questions that matter to them, what they say and what they call a reckoning of the past. But I spoke also to a gentleman from Nigeria who believes that justice hasn't been done yet for the Biafra war victim. And another one from Kenya was telling me that the Mau Mau fighters who died before the independence, even when Queen Elizabeth was on power, have been started to get justice, but they need more. They need to really to revisit that part now. Whether they will get it or not and how it will happen, this is another question.
Mm. That was VOA's Venuste Nshimiyimana. Thank you so much, Venuste, for that report.
You're welcome.
World leaders are converging in New York for the 77th session of the United Nations General Assembly, commonly known as UNGA. The UN says that this year's participants will explore transformative solutions to interlocking shared challenges, including the global COVID-19 pandemic, climate change, and conflict. And they say that the war in Ukraine will be on the minds of most African leaders as their countries struggle with a worsening food crisis driven in part by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. For more on what is on the agenda for this year's UNGA, I reached VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir. Meetings are taking place on the same day as the Queen's funeral. How has the funeral affected or otherwise overshadowed what is taking place in New York?
So the annual debate actually starts on Tuesday. So a lot of leaders do have a little bit of time to rush to New York to make their speeches on Tuesday, but it actually has led to quite a bit of reshuffling of the list of speakers. But today's main UN events, such as the Education Summit, those are going ahead as scheduled. We had expected more world leaders here for that, but it's going to be going off more at the minister level today. And the Secretary General, he made a tribute to the Queen this morning at his first event of the day. He said she was an extraordinary leader who gave a lifetime of service, and he noted that it's service and action for humanity that brings the world together at the UN this week.
And what are some of the top priorities on the agenda for African leaders as they meet other world leaders?
Well, I think we're we're going to hear a lot about them ringing the alarm bells on climate change, how it is hurting the continent. For instance, we're seeing unprecedented drought in places like Madagascar and the Horn of Africa, and that's fueling food insecurity. So we're going to hear also a lot about food insecurity, and that also relates to the war in Ukraine, because grain and wheat exports from Ukraine have been slowed because of the Russian invasion. So it'll be, I'll be interested to see if these African leaders mention the war specifically, and because a lot of them have expressed that they feel they're pressured to take a side, and they've been trying to avoid taking sides in the war. You know, they don't want to get stuck between either the United States or Russia, so they're sort of trying to be neutral. So it'll be interesting to see how far they're willing to go in their annual debate speeches about the war and its impact on them.
Right. And, you know, many African leaders are there to speak about their own challenges at home dealing with the pandemic and other local issues. However, the focus, like you say, for most of the world is on Ukraine. How are the leaders talking about or addressing this issue? What specifically has been the impact of Russia's invasion on the continent?
We've seen global food, fuel, and fertilizer prices go up dramatically since February 24th when Russia invaded Ukraine. So the UN, the Secretary General, and Turkey have helped to negotiate a deal that Russia would allow Ukraine to export its grain, and the UN will help smooth some of the obstacles to Russia selling its fertilizer, because they're top exporters of this. There are no international sanctions on fertilizer. It's important to point that out. But the Russians have placed quotas on it, and they've complained about companies not wanting to do business with them. And that is true. Some companies are afraid of running afoul of international sanctions if they do business with them. So they're not interested, really, in working with the Russians. But we need more fertilizer on the world market. I think we're going to hear that from the Secretary General this week. He's going to be driving that point home, because without fertilizer, especially in Africa, you're going to see smaller crop yields. And in 2023, this could lead to food shortages. And everybody wants to avoid this.
That was Margaret Bashir, VOA's UN correspondent in New York. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Somalia's President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud tells VOA that he has discussed new strategies in Washington about fighting al-Shabaab militants. The president sat down for an exclusive interview with Abdurrahman Yabaro, the head of VOA's Somali service, to talk about his trip.
Well, in the last 2 days I was here in D.C., I met with the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Lloyd, who received me in his office in the Pentagon. We have a very good and fruitful discussion about our common objective of fighting and eliminating the menace of terrorism in Somalia, in the Horn of Africa, and globally. We have also revived the defense-backed or defense agreement that we had with the United States. United States being the major partner in Somalia, we have agreed that we further improve the relationship and the working together. And then the same, I met the White House staff, the National Security Advisor of the President and his team, and the Homeland Security Chief as well. I also met the Secretary of State in the State Department, and I met the Treasury Department. All of them, we've discussed about the improving the relationship, working relationship between Somalia and those agencies of the United States of America. And all these discussions were really fruitful, and the Somali people will see soon the outcome and the fruits of these discussions.
Thank you, Mr. President. You are the only Somali president historically that was elected twice. And with the experience that you had from the previous years, what's the new things that you're going to use? How are you going to tackle the problems of al-Shabaab, for example, this time?
Well, al-Shabaab was there in 2012, 2017, when I was in the office for the first time. And the war against al-Shabaab in those days and today is a bit different. Al-Shabaab become more complex and they become very sophisticated, and now we've changed the strategies that we are fighting. We're developing new strategies, new approaches. and we shared all those new strategies and approaches to the United States government, which we really happened to be on the same page for all these issues. So the challenges of this term I'm meeting is quite different. The security, Al-Shabaab, is a major one. The droughts and the victims of the climate change and environmental impact is another one. Humanitarian challenges that existing, preventing the humanitarian to the drought victims to go into the famine phase is another challenge. So there are multiple challenges in Somalia of today, which was not there in my first term, or which were there in a different shape. We shared those challenges with the United States government. Some challenges we are both of us facing commonly between the United States and the Somali government, and some are specific for Somalia. So those who are common, the two of us, we are working together and we developed tools and mechanisms to work together. And those who are specific for Somalia, we have agreed that the United States government will support Somalia to overcome those challenges and change those challenges into opportunities.
That was Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud speaking with VOA's Abdirahman Yabaro. The president of Botswana says the decision to impose a state of emergency, that's the second in the country's history, helped the Southern African country to better manage the COVID-19 pandemic. The move, President Mokgweetsi Masisi says, enabled his administration to implement measures to boost the economy battered by the pandemic. In an exclusive interview with VOA's Peter Cloti on the sidelines of the ongoing United Nations General Assembly, President Masisi says that he wants to deepen the relationship between Habarone and Washington. His remarks come ahead of the upcoming U.S.-Africa summit scheduled for December.
We committed to mobilizing every resource we had under my leadership as I chair the presidential task team, which I formed, as a matter of urgency. It was so urgent that in order for us to effectively, to our comfort, manage the situation, particularly the preventative part, which meant taking away certain liberties, civil liberties of persons, we had to put in place a state of emergency. And sadly, it was the longest state of emergency the country had ever experienced, approximately 18 months.
So what would you say has been the positive outcome? Because this is the first time the country has imposed a state of emergency since the country's independence.
No, actually, it's the second time.
Second time, right.
But, you know, the nice thing is that we've always imposed our state of emergencies as a result of public need and necessity. So the positive outcome is that we were able, more than we could otherwise have, were able to control the movement of persons, control the size of crowdings that we experienced. We were able to legally manage certain industries from operating, and therefore the behavior of persons, particularly in the alcohol space. We were able to educate our persons and the public about the painful interventions that needed to be put in place, which were necessary for us to manage as best we could the pandemic.
You made mention of innovation. Talking about innovation, how are you carrying out this innovation, and how do you include the youth in terms of expanding your economy, creating jobs for the youth?
Well, you know what we do? We run hackathons as one. We seek sponsorship for these. The government is building an ecosystem which will enable it, not just through promotion, but in the cognitive delivery of education. We provide opportunity for young people to manipulate gadgets and technology, systems and knowledge that will enable them to churn out and optimize their creativity. We also challenge them. You know, there is a problem. You know, I've got so many hours or so much time. Resolve it, and there's a reward for it. So there's intrinsic motivation built into it.
Mr. President, this December, the White House is organizing the U.S.-Africa Summit. What are your expectations and what do you want to see?
My expectation is that we're going to engage the U.S. Biden administration honestly, sincerely, in ways in which we deepen our mutual understanding of the values that we share. And these values that we share, when articulated and translated into programmatic collaborative systems, then we would probably get out with some agreement of a way forward.
What would you say is the current state of affairs between Habaroni and Washington, and how do you want the relationship to be in the next few years under your leadership?
We've always had a cordial relationship. We have diplomatic relations with the United States of America since independence. And the United States has been by far, you know, a huge support to our development effort. And in some instances, particularly in the health space, if it were not for the U.S. through the various programmatic interventions, as in education, we would not be speaking the language we are, because many of us may not even be able to have survived that. And the U.S. has been a friend to Botswana. I want to deepen this. I want to grow this.
That was President Mokgweetsi Masisi of Botswana speaking exclusively to my colleague Peter Clotty.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week, right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Associated Press says the Spanish charity Open Arms has rescued 372 people trying to cross the Mediterranean to Europe in flimsy smugglers' boats. The corpse of a man shot by smugglers has also been recovered. Some on board need medical attention and are suffering from dehydration. The charity has made at least two requests to seek safe harbor in Malta. The AP says the rescue ship performed three operations in 24 hours, including one that included 294 people, mostly Egyptians, in a barge in waters south of Malta. It says those on board have been at sea for 4 days. Other rescues include 59 migrants from Syria, Egypt, Sudan, and Eritrea, including 10 children. They were taken from an oil platform they had reached in international waters near Tunisia. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
World leaders gather in New York for the annual United Nations General Assembly. Count on VOA to be there, delivering news you can trust on radio, TV, and the web. A free press is essential. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05.